Welcome to Negotiate Your Career Growth. I'm Jamie Lee, and I teach you how to blend the best of negotiation strategies with feminist coaching so you get promoted and better paid without burning bridges or burning out in the process. Let's get started.
I have with me today Dr. Jennifer Nash, and I'm so excited for this conversation on human leadership. And so before we dive in any further, Dr. Jennifer Nash, would you tell us more about who you are and how you arrived at this work to get us started?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Jamie. So super excited to be here. And I have spent like the last 8 years or so writing this book, Be Human, Lead Human. And it's actually a compilation of everything I learned over the course of my career and what I started studying in graduate school so I could understand what led organizations and leaders to be more effective than others. Mm-hmm. And the underpinning of all of that is this humans framework and the concept of human leadership that I've described in the book.
And so tell us more about what human leadership is. What is it and why do leaders need it now more than ever?
Yeah. So human leadership at its fundamental basic level is the ability of people who are in a position to lead others and prioritize people rather than prioritizing profits or productivity or performance or process. Leaders today are in a position where the workplace has fundamentally changed since COVID. And we're not going back. It's like the pandemic opened Pandora's box. And there is no going back to what that status quo was. And what we saw during that evolution of the workplace is that leaders had all of these tools in their toolboxes to lead process, to lead projects, to lead performance, you know, and to lead productivity. But what they didn't have was tools to lead people. And as you and I both know, the tools to lead people and the tools to lead projects are very different set of tools. And so why it's important now is that for organizations to be effective going forward and for leaders to be effective at leading people and be the best leaders that they can be, they need to have these tools in their toolkit.
Can you give me an example of one of the tools in the toolkit?
Yeah. So one example to me is building relationships. So when I did the research for my book, I found out that most leaders don't make time to build relationships at work. Many of them felt that building relationships was extracurricular. Some of them felt that building a relationship was something that they did at a happy hour, for example. Mm-hmm. Others felt like they're not being paid to build relationships. They're being paid to deliver work. Mm-hmm. And yet others felt like, you know, I'm spending all this time in meetings all day. When would I even have time on my calendar to build a relationship with somebody? So there were all these different myriad of rationale and reasoning why people weren't focusing on building relationships. And when it came right down to it, there were just a handful, you know, of the hundreds of people that I interviewed that actually had a strategic plan for how they went about building relationships and further what they thought relationships did in the workplace, you know, and that is critical. They're the glue that holds us together. They are what facilitates getting work done. The work is the reason for the relationship. And so shifting that thinking and shifting those actions and behaviors related to the thinking is what those outstanding leaders in my study were actually doing to drive performance.
So in the chat before we hit record, we mentioned how more women tend to be open to these ideas than men. And as a coach for women, many of my clients, they do prioritize. They feel the relationship is what makes their job or their careers so fulfilling. They love working with their team, with their supervisors, and they prioritize it and they cherish that, right? And so I'm curious, when you say building relationship, like how is that different from just showing up to collaborate with people on a project?
So I think there's a couple ways that it's different. I think the way in which that collaboration is approached is also part of that relationship. So if you are looking at the person in front of you, for example, as an employee, mm-hmm. whose sole purpose is to deliver output for the organization, that's a very different mindset and a very different lens that you put on that person rather than coming into that meeting, for example, and maybe first asking the person a question about how their evening went, because you know they had something going on that night, or, you know, their child performed in a play, or, you know, they have elder care issues and they were having challenges, you know. And so maybe you know those things about that person, and you start out the conversation by just establishing that rapport in that way first. And maybe then the conversation goes to, oh, well, how's the project going? And what are the challenges, you know? So taking a look at how you think about the person in front of you is actually part of that relationship and how you identify the person, either just an employee or as this whole human being with, you know, hopes and dreams and all these different identities that they bring to the table.
That brings me to negotiation, because when you effectively negotiate, right? And I think about negotiation as a leadership skill, right?
Oh.
Leaders have to negotiate all the time.
Yeah.
And building rapport is one of the key first steps.
Mm-hmm.
And also as a leader, as a person who's managing and trying to work with other types of people, you have to build trust, and building rapport is once again a key element of building trust in the relation, in the working relationship.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, based on that, would you give us an example? Maybe it's similar, maybe it's something different. How do human leadership principles make a leader better equipped to negotiate for their career growth? Right. We already talked about building rapport, and I'm curious if there are other ways or tangential ways that come to mind.
Mm-hmm. You know, so one of the principles that I have, you know, in the basic 10 that form human leadership is around this idea that organizations are places where people come to grow and work, not just work. And in the past, we tended to think that, you know, you went to work, you did your work, and you came home, and maybe all that personal development or personal growth was happening outside of that space. And today with human leaders, they really understand that organizations are places where people come to grow and evolve and become their best selves and work. And so part of that growth and evolution is understanding, where are you in that personal professional development spectrum? Who are you in that space, and where do you want to go?
Mm-hmm.
Being clear about that and understanding where it is that you're starting from and where you want to go, that helps you drive that career growth and be clear about what could be the next step in your career path. Maybe you are a manager today who doesn't have any leadership of people responsibility, but maybe you want to be a leader of people in the future. So what are the skills that you need to step into maybe a stretch role in your current assignment, or step into that next path and understand what is it that's going to help you be successful getting there? And so negotiating that career growth requires that you are clear about where you are, where you want to go, and what are the skills and gaps that you need to fill in order to get there.
Yeah. And I know human leadership principles, they apply to all genders. It's a gender neutral framework. But I'm curious, as a woman, what do you think is a small action that a woman leader, take for example, who have been socialized to prioritize relationships, but maybe also socialized to sort of diminish her own contributions, right? Those are the things that you encounter as a woman, and generally speaking, not all. But I'm curious, what do you think are some small, tangible steps that a woman leader can take to be more of a human leader?
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the very first things is that, you know, as women, we tend to deprioritize ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
We tend to put everyone else before us. And oftentimes we're not even on the list because everything else comes before us. And maybe we're at the bottom if we're even on the list. So one of the things I would suggest or invite your audience to think about is, how can they prioritize themselves first? You know, as leaders, we have to lead ourselves first. That's another one of the principles, the top 10 principles. And yet most people think, well, leaders lead other people. Well, they do, but they have to lead themselves first in order for others to follow them. What is it that women can do to lead themselves first, right? What are the values that they are using, for example, to guide their decision-making at work? You know, when you have all this noise coming around you and all of these different opinions maybe being forced on you, where do you look to make that decision for yourself? What is it that is helping you create that set of decision-making principles that helps you chart that course and chart that path? And in the book, I talk about that as your internal GPS. Mm-hmm. You know, where is that guiding you? What does that look like? And so I would encourage your audience to think about how can they put themselves first and lead themselves first so that they are then more effective in leading others and more effective at leading the business.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that internal GPS? Because I think it's really fascinating. I think it's a useful concept, especially as women, we've been socialized to feel like somebody else out there has more authority, has more knowledge, has the capacity to judge us, right? And so I love the concept of internalizing a GPS, a navigation system that you decide.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah. So I'll tell you a story about one of my clients. So I'll call her Markeisha. I talk about her in the book as well. And Markeisha was very successful, person in her industry. And she was looking at, she wanted that next step in her career. You know, we talked about that a little bit earlier. She wanted to go to the next step and she found out about this position that looked like it was going to be a good fit. And so she was talking with me about that. And I was asking her, well, you know, how does that feel for you? Like when you hear about that job being described to you and what it sounds like, she's like, I said, how does that feel? And she's like, well, I'm not really all that excited about it. She's like, it doesn't give me a warm and fuzzy feeling when I think about it, but everyone else around me is telling me that I should apply for it. And even my CTO is telling me that I should apply for it. And he basically encouraged me to do it within 24 hours because the job is going to be, delisted, right? And so she had all of these different people telling her around her, yeah, you should go and do this. But yet her internal system was telling her, there's maybe something that isn't clicking right here. You know, this seems to be a red flag. And, you know, when I dug into this a little bit more, I found that, we tend to ignore the signals. We tend to ignore the data points that our bodies and our intuition are telling us because we've been programmed and trained to think differently about that. That, in other words, that the voices outside of us are what we should pay attention to, rather than an internal GPS, that internal data system telling us, hey, there's something not quite right here. And so what happened with Markeisha was she went ahead, even though she had this internal warning system going on, she went ahead and applied for the role and she got the job. And then there was a leadership change. And then there was new leadership that came into the organization. And when they noticed that she wasn't really passionate about this job, there were some hard conversations that were held. And Markeisha actually found herself out of a job. And so, I tell that story in the book because I always like to highlight, it's so important that we have that internal GPS. And as women in particular, we have that intuition. We have that sixth sense that we need to pay attention to because it helps us stay safe. It helps us make decisions that are more aligned with our internal world. And there's usually dissonance when our decisions are not aligned with our internal world. We sense that there's a disconnection between the external environment and our internal world. So paying attention to that internal GPS helps us stay on that track of making decisions that are right for us and ultimately will help benefit us and those around us.
I love that because even just the concept of human leadership, it's about how do we humanize as opposed to dehumanize our inner knowing, our intuition, our internal guiding systems. And, the first thing that you said really is still resonating with me, which is that how do we deprioritize profit, processes, projects, and prioritize the humanity? Because at the end of the day, it's humans doing the work.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's really a huge challenge to the status quo, because all these businesses, companies, they're all striving to generate profit margins and satisfy shareholders and generate value for, you know, stockholders, etc. So where do you see that compromise? I mean, I'm thinking about it because some of the clients I coach, they work for startups, and they're like, we're cash strapped, and this giant corporation is sort of like, you know, pushing us around with their big demands, and we have to stand firm. But I mean, it's work. It's a lot of work. And sometimes that work can feel dehumanizing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think in many situations it is an and, but it's what comes first, right? What is being prioritized? If you get the right people on the bus and you have the people who believe in what you do and in the mission and in the values, it becomes much easier to then bring the profits and the products and the process and the prioritization into the equation. But if you're starting out with the wrong people on the bus, you are never going to get to that point. And as a startup entrepreneur, as an entrepreneur myself, like, you know, I have learned that sometimes the hard way. You know, I brought someone on because I felt like they would be a good fit, but yet they really weren't aligned with the mission and the values, and they weren't doing it for the reasons that I held important. You know, they were doing it for, you know, the money they would make. And that isn't how I drive my business. It's so that was an example to me of here's a situation where, yes, I needed somebody to hit a particular deadline, but the other pieces of that weren't in place. And those were the human element pieces. And that was what made it not work. And so, yes, I completely agree. You've got all this pressure coming at you from all these different places. And at the same time, not taking the time to make sure you have the right people in place will ultimately not help you succeed.
I once coached a client who really struggled with letting underperformance go.
Yeah.
And the reason they really struggled with being decisive, I mean, in everything else, they were super decisive. Mm-hmm. In terms of the workload they took on, in terms of holding themselves accountable to achieve, you know, really high expectations and standards and working around the clock. But when it came to an underperformer, they're like, I'm afraid that there's going to be, you know, a negative consequence. I'm afraid to disappoint them. I'm afraid, right? And so I'm curious, could we go back a little bit on the topic of relationship building, right? Because mm-hmm. I wonder for some women leaders that, you know, the way we've been socialized to think about relationship and our the role that we play in relationships, like to sort of carry the burden, so to speak, like I think it holds us back from being holds us back from seeing relationship building as an asset rather than a liability. In some instances. Mm-hmm. Does that not make sense?
I'm thinking about what you're asking and I'm not sure that I'm clear on the question.
So I guess I'm asking, like, what if prioritizing relationships holds women leaders back from being even more decisive and even more authoritative in their decision-making, or even like asking, you know, sometimes women hesitate to ask because like, what if this hurts the relationship?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm curious, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. So in other words, if women are prioritizing relationships, is it hurting them or hindering them in other areas?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a very interesting question. I have not approached it from that perspective yet. What I have seen is that, you know, organizations and women in particular that prioritize relationships drive outstanding performance.
Mm.
So it's like that human part falls into place, and then everything else is in alignment, right? Look at Ideo, look at Zappos, you know, look at Ford when Alan was there. Right? He had stock increases of 1,837% during his years of tenure there. And because he was able to get people rallied around that vision and rallied around that mission, he wouldn't have been able to do that if he wasn't using human leadership or relational leadership. So I feel like sometimes as women, we may have a hesitancy to let someone go that isn't working out because we've built a relationship with them. And maybe because we feel like it'll damage that relationship if we let them go. I think maybe sometimes it can, right? I mean, people that are let go, they tend to take that personally, and there can be some ill will there. I also think at the same time, when you're letting someone go, it's important to help them understand precisely why they're being let go, not beat around the bush and not sugarcoat it, and make it about the data. You know, you don't make it about the person. It's not necessarily the person that may be not the fit. It might be their approach. It might be their skill set. It might be, you know, something that is more, not necessarily tangible, but more you can point to, look, I hired you to do X. And after 4 weeks, I didn't see that you were able to produce X. And I haven't seen evidence that anything is going to change, right? So using more of a data-driven approach to having to let someone go, as opposed to, look, I don't like you. This isn't working out. I don't want you on my team anymore. That isn't helpful for them because it doesn't help them move forward in advancing and developing and growing. And it's not helpful for you because then you don't have a sense for, well, what did I really need in that position? Because I didn't articulate it to them. Does that mean that I won't articulate it to the next person?
Got it. Yeah, I think that's really spot on. What I'm hearing is that you want to balance prioritizing humanity with logic.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And as you know, like, you know, whenever there's conflict, right, as women, sometimes we tend to not want to address conflict. We maybe want to avoid it. And that doesn't help anyone either. So, you know, being, you know, what I have learned in my journey is I'm much slower to hire someone and bring someone on now, but I'm very fast to fire if it isn't working out. And so at the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey, I was completely the opposite because I didn't, you know, I didn't want to hurt that person's feelings if it wasn't working out, or I didn't, you know, want to damage the relationship. But what I learned is that it's not about the person themselves. It's about what they did or did not bring to the table, and demonstrating the evidence of that, and then having them also look at that and provide their perspective on it, because maybe they don't see themselves that way. And maybe that's the first time in their lives that they're getting feedback like that.
Yeah. And I can totally see how this framework, right, balancing humanity with logic, right, building a strong fact-based, evidence-based case is also a great way to advocate and negotiate for the growth that you want.
Yes, exactly. Because then from that position, you have, you know, that tangible or that data-driven evidence that you can say, look, I have delivered this and this and this. I did it in this and this and this time frame. I did it this under, you know, under budget, whatever the deliverable or whatever the accomplishment was. And that leads into a very strong case for how you're benefiting the organization, how you will be projected to deliver going forward, and have that track record of being a high performer. So in that case, you're in a strong position to negotiate for what you're looking for and what you want from the organization.
Love it. Okay. So anything else I've not asked you that you think the audience should know?
So I think, you know, one of the things that people often ask me about the book or about this topic of human leadership is, you know, they'll say something like, you know, Jennifer, I don't have a P&L, or, you know, I don't have the title of leader, or I don't have, you know, all of these people reporting to me. You know, so does this really apply to me? And what I often tell them is, yes, absolutely. Because at the macro level, these principles are all around helping someone live their best life and be the best person that they can possibly be and want to be. Mm-hmm. So looking at that from that perspective, I've had moms come to me and say, hey, I'm not a leader, but I would love to teach my child, you know, how to lead, how to develop that leader within, so that as they grow, they can be successful in life and in school and in relationships and in their careers. And so I've found that the book applies to a lot of different audiences, not just necessarily people that have the title of leader or that have a big P&L under them.
Excellent. Thank you. So what's one quality about you that makes you so human?
So one quality about me that makes me human is that I do not have a very thick skin. So I have been told throughout my life, oh, you just need to toughen up. Like, you just need to grow a tough skin. Like, you can't take all these things personally. And that's just not how I was built. I'm human and I have a lot of feelings and emotions and they run pretty deep. And so, you know, things do hurt sometimes, you know, when you get certain feedback or when people treat you in a certain way, or there's, you know, social media haters, whatever it could be. And so, yeah, that's one thing that I don't usually share that, you know, people don't really know about me.
I can totally relate. This year, I found out I'm a highly sensitive person, which is a test created by Dr. Elaine Aaron. There's a whole book. There's a series of books that you can find out. And yeah, I'm very sensitive to everything, to noise, to, you know, bright lights, to opinions. But it doesn't make you weak. I think it makes you a lot more, you know, sensitive and also perceptive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, speaking for myself.
Yeah, I actually think it is one of your superpowers in that way.
Thank you. I like to think so too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you're very observant. You know, you can tell, like, I feel like I'm being listened to, right? I can see that, you know, we're on the camera. I know your listeners won't see that, but, you know, there's, you know, we all bring these different abilities to the table, and it's what makes this beautiful tapestry, you know, when we all interact with one another.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I'm taking away about the book, Be Human, can you tell me the title one more time, please?
It's Be Human, Lead Human.
Be Human, Lead Human. Yeah. I think it's a great resource for leaders who want to become better coaches or who want to, like, lead in a coach way.
100%. And that is also an application of this book, that if I had retitled it, it would have been, you know, Coaching Skills for Leaders.
Beautiful. Where can people go to learn more about the book and the work that you do?
Yeah. So if people like to learn more about me and the book, they can go to my website. It's drjennifernash.com. And at the website, they also have a link to the book. There's a whole bunch of resources there. They can learn more about me and what I do. And then there's a contact form if they'd like to reach out.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Jennifer Nash.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure being here, Jamie.
As an executive coach for women, I'm super passionate about helping smart women who hate office politics get promoted and better paid. I do this through my unique combination of, 1, self-directed neuroplasticity tools backed by science, 2, negotiation strategies proven to work for women by academic research, and 3, intersectional feminist lens that honors women's lived experiences. To learn more about my one-on-one coaching series and to book your free hour-long consultation with me, come on over to jamieleecoach.com/apply. It's jamieleecoach.com/apply. JAMIELEECOACH.com/apply. Talk soon.